It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We are going to keep our country safe. We are going to do whatever is necessary to keep our country safe.
Sources say the White House may give up on the idea of lifting the temporary restraining order against the immigration ban and may not appeal the case to the Supreme Court. Instead, the White House will focus on fighting to prove the constitutionality of the ban in federal district court in Seattle.
We'll be doing something very rapidly having to do with additional security for our country. You'll be seeing that sometime next week. In addition, we will continue to go through the court process, and ultimately, I have no doubt that we'll win that particular case.
The White House is also weighing the option of writing a new executive order that would create specific carve-outs for legal permanent residents and possibly visa holders already in the country that would allow them to come and go. And there are other executive orders in the works, including one that would keep the detention center at Guantanamo Bay open indefinitely. But the president appears confident he can put in place strict measures to screen immigrants.
I feel totally confident that we will have tremendous security for the people of the United States. We will be extreme vetting, which is a term that I developed early in my campaign because I saw what was happening.
The court case was a distraction as the president welcomed his second foreign leader to the White House. Security and trade were at the top of the agenda for the meeting with Shinzo Abe. President Trump making a veiled reference to one of his pet peeves, America's $70 billion trade deficit with Japan.
On the economy, we will seek a trading relationship that is free, fair, and reciprocal, benefiting both of our countries.
Abe, who spent the past 30 years in government and politics, praised President Trump's uphill battle to win the election.
This is the dynamism of democracy. I would like to celebrate and congratulate Donald being sworn in as the president.
The president reciprocated, saying after their meeting at Trump Tower in November, the two had become fast friends.
All right, so that's a part of report of John Roberts on Friday. Sandy Rios with you. You know, of course, that the Ninth Circuit Court ruled against President Donald Trump on his executive orders keeping the stay in place. And you know, I've told you repeatedly, but I will repeat, and you've heard it from other sources, that the Ninth Circuit Court is the most widely overturned circuit court in the nation, district court. And it is rendered some of the most offensive opinions through the years. It is radical of the radicals. It's located in San Francisco. It controls 20% of the population. It covers more states than it should. We're going to talk to Daniel Horowitz about it in just a few minutes. So it's not a surprise. It's just not a surprise. It would have been a shock had they ruled any other way, because that court has been out of control for a long time. And we're going to talk about our court system, our system, the judiciary, and how it has gotten out of control. It's been happening for a long time, and nobody has bothered to rein it in. And this is not new, but it's worse. And so Daniel will join us in just a few minutes, and we'll talk about that. Meanwhile, raids are being conducted around the country by ICE. Criminal illegal aliens are being arrested. And the irony, this is a story from the New York Observer. And let me just read this, and then I'll tell you why I'm choosing this one. Make the Road New York. Make the Road New York. An immigrant advocacy group told the media this evening that Immigration and Customs Enforcement sweeps on Staten Island netted 5 Mexican nationals in the past week. 5. That's the story to me. Like, they go all over Staten Island and they only caught 5. And my point is, but there's a huge story about this. Like, this is terrible because 5. How many do you think illegal Mexicans are on a Staten Island? I do think there might be more than 5. I don't know. Meanwhile, down in Texas, or Phoenix, Mexican illegals who are criminals, who have criminal records, and some others have been caught in a sweep, as I understand it, have been arrested. But here's the deal. They are claiming they would rather have detention than deportation. They say they're in it for the long haul. Even if it takes months, even if it takes years, we are here to fight. Now, what are they fighting? Well, they're trying to get the Mexican government to give money to pay their legal costs here in the United States. And by the way, Enrique Peña Nieto recently budgeted about $50 million to the country's 50 consulates to help pay the cost of defending migrants who are in the U.S. illegally and facing deportation. But that's really not even what they're after. What they are after, in their own words, is a complete breakdown of our immigration system so that everyone can stay, so that there's no order whatsoever. They say that in this article, which is written by the Wall Street Journal, by the way. So their goal is just total anarchy in terms of immigration, and they might achieve it. And as a matter of fact, attorneys, ACLU attorneys and others are holding up signs saying, attorneys, we are here to help. Please come speak to us. And so they're giving tips then to illegal immigrants on how to avoid any trouble. Ask to see through a window or slipped under a door the badges and the proof of who the person is. Don't let them in. Don't talk to them. All kinds of detailed instructions on how to avoid any kind of problem with the law. It says, a flyer for undocumented immigrants in Arabic by immigration rights group United We Dream counsels those dealing with ICE agents to report and record everything that happens. Take notes of badge numbers, numbers of agents, time, type of car, exactly what happened. So they're busy helping illegal immigrants come into the country. But you know what? Let me tell you the other side of this story. This is the part we're not seeing too much of. There is a story. It's written very sympathetically. But actually, to me, it speaks volumes about what's happening. This is the title, Asylum Seekers Fleeing U.S. for Canada, Brave Snow, Extreme Cold. So they pick out one Somalian who is fleeing to Canada because he's afraid, you know, he won't get asylum here or he's not going to get asylum here. So they make it a very sad story. But my point is they're leaving. Many of them are leaving. They're getting the message, and that's a good thing. So in spite of all this hand-wringing and, you know, the rest of it, they are leaving the country. Well, lots of people are descending on the town halls of Republican congressmen. Alicia Cunha now gives a report, but I want you to listen carefully about how she words it, and then let's talk. Here it is.
A town hall meeting went sideways in conservative Utah for fifth-term Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz. Jessica Priest, a political science professor at BYU, tried to attend but couldn't get in.
I think it was a combination of things, but I think a number of people were there specifically trying to pressure Jason Chaffetz to put more pressure on Donald Trump.
There is angst in Chaffetz' district, where he was last reelected with almost three-quarters of the vote. Despite his move to seek disciplinary action for Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway after she publicly promoted Ivanka Trump's products, there is concern whether, as chair of the GOP House Oversight Committee, Chaffetz will investigate potentially questionable dealings in the Trump administration.
Some of the things that I've heard, the accusations, don't step over the line.
The town hall took place in reliably Democratic Salt Lake City, a contrast from earlier in the week when Chaffetz met face-to-face with President Trump.
It was an honor to sit with the president. It doesn't happen every day. It's the first time I've ever been in the Oval Office.
The Republican from Utah is not alone in finding crowds and frustration at home. California GOP Congressman Tom McClintock had to be escorted out of a town hall meeting recently. Rowdy protesters furious over his support for President Trump's travel ban.
This country is a long, long way from any kind of kumbaya moment. The intensity, the anger, the outrage, the polarization, the political dysfunction, they're all going to continue.
If all of this looks and sounds familiar, think back to the election of President Obama in 2008. Shortly after came the birth of the Tea Party movement. Furious voters managed to replace some Republicans in Washington with more conservative ones.
All right. See, here's the problem with that story, and this is the way it's being couched to all of us. It's that this is the new Tea Party movement. This is just an organic reaction of the people to these terrible orders. And so they're just spontaneously coming to these Republican town hall meetings and expressing their angst, only it's not true. In the case of Tom McClintock, I know that people who support him in his district were not even able to get into the room because the room had been filled with leftists who were organized. They had been organized, but I'm not sure who organized them. But I will tell you this, the Resist movement is organizing in every district. In fact, there is a website, I should put that on our Facebook page, maybe I will do that, where you can enter your zip code and you can figure out where you can organize to resist the Trump administration. And then there are instructions on how to obstruct town halls. Not on that particular site. Oh, well, I don't know. There could be there, but there. That's not where the origin of these early protests are, I don't believe. But my point is, this is not organic. The Tea Party movement was organic. I remember it well because my husband and I were at the first Tea Party rally, a huge one, in Washington in 2008. Objecting to Obamacare. There were thousands and thousands of people who came from all over the country. Many of them didn't even stay in a hotel. They had just driven in to be there for the day and were driving back home. I will never forget that. That was an organic Tea Party movement. This is no such thing. And so just to prove the point, Jesse Waters did a really funny piece last night. He went out on the street to talk to some of those that were so upset about the immigration orders, temporarily banning travel from seven countries. Let's listen to Jesse's interaction.
You were chanting that America was never great earlier. Do you believe that?
It's a chant. It rhymes. 5, 6, 7, 8. America was never great.
But you know, America was pretty great when we defeated the Nazis.
This is not good here.
Which nations are on the temporary travel ban list?
Well, as of right now, I'm not completely sure about the actual countries.
Libya, Iraq, for sure, Afghanistan.
Lebanon.
Many, like...
This isn't turning out the way I wanted it to.
It's all the nations that he wants, just not in America. That's bad phrasing, and I'm on TV.
Boy, what a great show.
Why don't you want people extremely vetted before they come here from those countries?
Why should they be extremely vetted?
Because those are havens of terrorism.
America's a haven of terrorism.
If you think America's so bad, you should try Syria.
The countries that he's blocked, they're not terrorist countries.
Iran's not a terrorist country?
No.
It's the number one sponsor of terrorism in the world.
What you talking about, Willis?
Do you believe in borders?
If you're cool and all, you're coming in to help me. I'm cool with that, but you're not coming here to mess things up.
So don't you want to check to see if someone's cool before you let them in?
Well, of course, you always want to check. That's why we have our airports.
And that's why we want extreme vetting, right?
Of course.
But so you do agree with the Trump ban? What does your sign say on the back?
On the back it says, punch a Nazi.
Wait, I thought you don't believe in violence.
I do believe in violence, not gun violence.
So, just these things.
Yeah.
I've got Jack Johnson and Tom O'Leary waiting for you.
I'm an immigrant. I'm from South Africa. Do you think I need to be extremely vetted?
After some of the comments you made, yes.
All right, so that was Jesse Waters and hilarious last night on Fox. You see how the madness, it's just madness, and we just have to keep speaking the truth. And hoping that it's getting through to some people. I know Meryl Streep made some statement yesterday, went off on Donald Trump, and I thought she's a brilliant woman. She's one of my favorite actresses, and yet she is, and she's so eloquent, and she carries so much weight because she's a great actress, but her words are foolish and meaningless, and they come from a person who does not know what she's talking about. She does not know. And so we keep plugging away, speaking the truth. And by the way, let me just quickly say we are helping India Partners. And I want you to remember that. In fact, if you would like to help us, you can do that by calling 877-616-2396, 616-2396, that's 877. Or go online to AFR.net, and $7 a day will pay for one of these little girls to get them off the street. So I hope that you will help, and we'll be right back with Daniel Horowitz right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also Executive Vice President of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800-FAMILIES extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
In the darkest parts of Mumbai, India's red light districts, all it takes is a little bit of money, and a young girl, maybe as young as 8, is trafficked, her innocence stolen.
They made me sit in one place, and they sent a man near me, and then things started happening in the wrong ways, and I had no way out.
And it was every single day.
Morning, they used to come. Afternoon, they used to come. Evening is the same thing that we used to do. And even if we would express that we were tired or it is hurting us, they would not listen because they have paid a huge amount for us and they would get what they wanted.
But you can make sure it never happens again when you team up with AFR and India Partners. Right here on AFR, we'll show you how your gift of $7.08 provides a day of safety, rescue, and care at a safe house operated by India Partners. So how many children can you rescue? Learn more and give now at AFR.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. An ugly scene unfolded outside Jefferson Middle School Academy in Washington, D.C. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos was blocked from entering the school by a screaming protester. Secretary DeVos is white, the protester black. Video of the encounter was posted on Twitter, and this is what it sounded like.
She does not represent anything that they stand for.
Secretary DeVos was chased away by other protesters before finally gaining entry into the school, a public school. She released a statement affirming the right to peacefully protest, but said she would not be deterred in her mission, and said no school door in America will be blocked from those seeking to help our school children. What a sad state of affairs in our nation. A black woman blocking a white woman from entering a schoolhouse door. So much for a post-racial America. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Right now, we are considering and pursuing all options. Those options include seeking an emergency stay at the Supreme Court, continuing the appeal with the panel, having an emergency hearing en banc, or going to the trial court in the district level and a trial on the merits. They also include, as you've mentioned, the possibility of new executive actions designed to prevent terrorist infiltration of our country. But I want to say something very clearly, and this is going to be very disappointing to the people protesting the president and the people in Congress, like Senator Schumer, who've attacked the president for his lawful and necessary action. The president's powers here are beyond question. The president has the authority under the INA section 8 U.S.C. 1182F to suspend the entry of aliens into this country, and he has Article 2 foreign powers to also engage in conducting border control and immigration control into this country. Those powers are substantial. They represent the very apex of presidential authority, and so we are contemplating new and additional actions to ensure that our immigration system does not become a vehicle for admitting people into our country who are hostile to this nation and its values.
All right, that was Stephen Miller. He's a senior advisor to the President of the United States. Stephen used to be on the staff of Jeff Sessions, and he is just sterling. I mean, he is really the backbone and the knowledge base. He contains the knowledge base of all of these things about immigration. And he's now, you know, he's actually written some of the president's speeches on this. So that was Stephen Miller defending the president and kind of giving an idea of what he might do in response to the Ninth Circuit decision. Before I introduce my guest, let me just tell you that in the Washington Examiner, it's Paul Bedard who wrote this. Here's the research. 72 individuals from seven mostly Muslim countries, those seven countries where the stays were issued temporarily, wailing and gnashing of teeth has taken place because the judges have told us there's no evidence that anyone has done any harm from those nations. And now we know that at least 72 convicted of terrorism have been convicted of terror. At least 72 have been convicted of terrorism from those seven countries. So it's actually just not true at all. It's just, I guess, they weren't prepared with names and numbers when the executive order was written. Daniel Horowitz is my guest, and Daniel is a senior editor for Conservative Review. I remember so well when Conservative Review began a few years ago, and I remember praising them even then because they were already, right at the onset, contributing so much to our knowledge base. Mark Levin is behind Conservative Review, but Daniel really is the brain trust. He's the one writing, and he is writing furiously on this issue. And by the way, Daniel is the author of a book called Stolen Sovereignty. And Daniel, first of all, good morning, and thank you for joining me.
Great to be with you, Sandy. Never a dull moment here.
Never a dull moment, and maybe not even a dull second these days. You know, did you ever dream when you wrote the book, Stolen Sovereignty, that it would be so applicable to what's happening right now? Because it's been, you wrote it about a year and a half ago, didn't you?
That's correct. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I wrote this with the assumption that one day we would have a president that actually enforced his immigration law. And it was after the courts redefined marriage, the building block of all civilization. Now they're redefining sexuality. And I said to myself, you know, after Scalia made a comment that he said, I quote, I can't imagine us getting further down the slippery slope than redefining marriage. And I said, well, there's one final frontier in judicial tyranny, and that's redefining the building block of a nation state, and that is sovereignty. So hence the title, Stolen Sovereignty of Unelected Judges, Stealing Our National Sovereignty. I just never thought it would happen this early in the administration.
You know what, Daniel, let's sit on that for a second, because you've written so much, but this is the one phrase you wrote that really struck me, or the idea that you captured in words, and you just said it, but I want you to say it again. You say that the Obergefell decision redefining civilization in regard to marriage was counter to this Ninth Circuit decision, which, how is it counter? Say it again.
Sure. No, I mean, it's kind of parallel that, you know, 2 years ago they redefined the building block of civilization. Now they're redefining the building block of a nation state to say that we no longer have the ability to self-determine those who could come into our country, be part of our civilization, become part of the citizenry, that the courts could unilaterally promote what Scalia called social transformation without representation.
So, Daniel, in practical application, the Ninth Circuit decision would allow anyone, anywhere, the right to enter this country without being vetted. Is it that extreme?
It's almost that bad. It's pretty much like that, because keep in mind that the injunction that Judge Robart, the district judge, and really a lot of judges across the nation, this is not limited to one circuit, although the Ninth is the worst. The federal judiciary is a dumpster fire. I mean, across the board, the legal profession is just, again, when you redefine marriage or sexuality, there are no limits. So now they're saying basically that any American university, I guess, could get standing in court and say, hey, that Somali jihadist sitting in some shack there in Somalia or Yemen or Iran, I need him here for my university. So I get standing and you better let him in. And that's really what happened here. It's not just those that were already issued green cards or visas and then couldn't get back in the country, which, by the way, was completely lawful. The president has that power pursuant to a number of statutes. But they put an injunction even on the elements of the law that said we're only going to prioritize religious minorities for our refugee program, those are future people that don't even exist in the pipeline. So, I mean, it is almost that radical that it creates an affirmative right to immigrate, at least to the extent that you could have a lawsuit where potentially a Muslim immigrant, a Muslim anywhere in the world could say, I have a First Amendment establishment clause right or equal protection 14th Amendment right to immigrate.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And, you know, we could talk about this, but I think people probably who are really paying attention understand that the president had every right to make this order. This is based on established law, a very clear statute written and signed by the Congress by the president then, and then by the Constitution itself. There is just no question, really, that he has the right to write an order like this. But the thing that I noticed, Daniel, in this discourse of the pundits out of D.C., is that mostly what they want to talk about, or they all feel compelled in each and every conversation. I've heard Laura Ingraham, who's probably one of the best on this issue, they feel compelled to say that the order was sloppily executed, that it was kind of messy, or something, some such to that. And I, every time they do that, I think to myself, you know what, that's not the issue. It's like they are playing to each other. Like that's something, they have to confess that in order to have credibility to say what else they're going to say. I don't know why that's such a, explain to me why that is such a fixation for D.C.-centric pundits.
You know, it's wrong politically and legally. It misses the point. You can't see the trees in the forest here. You know, of all people, during the election, I was pretty critical of Trump, and I'll certainly continue to be when I think he does things wrong. But the truth be told, what do you want from him here? He made a promise that, you know, when he said that this is unsafe to our country, it's not good for our national security, we're letting people in, you know, without vetting them. And this was really a very modest approach. It was a temporary moratorium. The full cutoff was only from seven countries. There's a lot more that could have been on that list. And on one hand, you say, hey, maybe wait for Jeff Sessions to be confirmed, wait for your cabinet, wait till you get your staff in. But, you know, there's also another thing that you want to shock and awe. You want to use your political capital right when you get in there to demonstrate that you actually mean what you say. So I kind of sympathize with what he did. What also bothers me about some of this punditry is that the implication of what they're saying is that, look, well, you know, there's some reason and a rhyme or reason to the courts, and if you just write it a little better, do this or that, then it will be upheld. What part of the courts are irremediably broken do they not understand? They literally overturned five statutes without even saying they were doing that. This has nothing to do with Trump. To be very clear, when you say that a certain executive action is unconstitutional, not just not pursuant to statute, that means you're in fact saying that even if Congress were to pass this, you would overturn it. So there's nothing he could do that would pass muster with the courts. Again, keep in mind, these are the courts that say a man with male plumbing must be treated like a woman if he wants to.
Yeah, so this is the point. They're missing the point. I don't know. They lose sight of the big picture. And the other part about this is, Daniel, how in the world would any of those pundits, and I actually came down to Charles Krauthammer last week, who I love Charles, but he's not right about this, of absolutely talking about how it wasn't necessary, the order wasn't necessary. I hear pundits talk. They have no access to the briefings that this president has. I don't know how they can say in unequivocal terms that it wasn't a necessary order or whatever, fill in the blanks. They don't know what he knows. So that's another defense to me of him. We have to trust him that when he gets these briefings, he has a reason, and he has hinted that they had a very strong reason. And as I understand it, there were probably, I think, around half a dozen deported. I'm not sure I have that number right, but that's what I remember reading.
Well, I mean, Sandy, I would actually disagree a little bit. I don't think we have to trust anything. I think we have to trust our own eyes. Look at what's going on in Europe. Look at what's going on here. You know, this is not just about the, you know, 72 or so, they say, from these countries that, you know, committed terror acts or were prosecuted, convicted for joining ISIS. I mean, you had the Ohio State attacker who was a Somali refugee who came in here in, I believe, 2011 on Obama's watch. But let's just take Somalia for a minute. We've brought in about 9,000 Somali refugees every single year for 23 years, since 1993. No other country has been afforded such status for so long, and it's just ridiculous. The people never voted for it. But you look at the Somali community in Minneapolis. It's not just the 40 or so over the last number of years who are convicted on terrorism-related charges. The U.S. attorney from there, and actually the federal district judge, Michael Davis, said in one of the recent trials of convicted ISIS terrorists there, that they have a major terror recruiting problem, and the tentacles are, quote, this is what he said, the tentacles are spread wide. What that tells you is this is more than just the people that actually committed terrorism. This is the fact that we are bringing in a culture that broadly cultivates that climate. So I'm hearing from a lot of people, even on the right, this notion that by default we have to let in everyone in the entire world unless we know ahead of time that that guy is an ISIS terrorist. And that's nonsense. We should only let in people that we know affirmatively love this country, share our Republican values. I have an entire chapter in my book, not just on the legality of immigration, but the history and traditions and values we had behind them. We have never done what we've done this past generation to bring in the Middle East in such large numbers, people that on the face of it do not share our values.
By the way, let me just, on Daniel's book, Stolen Sovereignty, we'll put a link to that book on our Facebook page because it's an excellent book and never has it been more timely. I think people are understanding, at least if they don't understand the details of the Constitution and how the judiciary's gotten out of hand, they understand that something's wrong here, and Daniel's book talks about that, so we'll be sure and put that on our Facebook page. Daniel, let's talk about, I don't know where to start. Let's talk about the Ninth Circuit Court. I have discussed it before, as you can imagine, and I have called, friends of mine used to call it the Ninth Circus years ago, and I remember doing a lot of television when they tried to take Under God out of the pledge. They are a radical bunch. But you do a whole article about something I did not know about, and that was, how could I keep up? How could anybody? The Ninth Circuit's relationship with Arizona and how they have really snatched away the rights of Arizonans around protecting their own state. Explain that.
Sure. I mean, the Ninth Circuit has been a huge problem. Everyone thinks of it as just California, but they control even some conservative states like Arizona, Montana, Idaho, they go into Nevada. And to begin with, it's just too big. It always needed to be divided up, and that's something supported even by non-conservatives. But yes, a lot of people focus too much on the Supreme Court. And remember, 99% of cases are decided by a three-judge panel of the appellate level. I mean, that is the final step for most litigation. And everything Arizona has tried to do, from preventing illegal alien murderers from getting out on bail, from enforcing immigration laws, federal immigration laws, everything they try to do, the Ninth Circuit throws out. And by the way, isn't it funny how when states want to uphold, endorse, echo, and complement federal immigration law, the courts say, no, that's a federal power. You can't do it. But yet when states want to undermine federal immigration policy and block it, they actually say, hey, you get standing in court. So these are the courts of Sodom and Gomorrah. This is what the Ninth Circuit's doing. They are stealing the sovereignty of Arizona. And now it's not just Arizona. They're doing it on a federal level. Here's what happens if we don't push judicial reform. For the remainder of Trump's presidency, forget about the Middle East issue, Middle East immigration, just run-of-the-mill illegal immigration, people coming over the border from Mexico. They have the ability to put an injunction on every single deportation, and all the left, the ACLU, needs to do is get one district judge within the Ninth Circuit to put an injunction, and that guy evidently has the ability to put a nationwide injunction. So even if you have other district judges saying, no, that's totally pursuant to statute, that's constitutional, you could do it, as long as one says, no, I'm putting a national injunction on it, the whole policy, now I don't agree with this, but the way we treat it in prevailing legal theory is that it's halted. And that's what happened here. A Massachusetts judge said Trump was well within his powers. But evidently no one's paying attention to that, because this is why the Ninth Circuit needs to be broken up if we really want to keep our sovereignty.
All right, Daniel Horowitz is my guest, the author of Stolen Sovereignty, Conservative Review. He's a senior editor, and we're going to talk some more about this because we want to talk. I'd like for Daniel to teach us a little bit about what the intention of the courts was and how they have stepped over the line. And is it really so outrageous that the president said a so-called judge? I don't think so, but I'm going to ask Daniel. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
The political and cultural landscape of our nation will continue to undergo major changes with the shift in power in our nation's capital. All the issues we care about, religious liberty, the sanctity of life and marriage, national security, immigration, and the economy will be up for debate. Focal Point will help you process it all from a biblical perspective live every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 Central on American Family Radio. I'm your congenial, convivial, and amiable host, Brian Fisher, and I approve this message.
Who could have foreseen that public bathrooms would become a forum for public discourse? Target stores have opened their bathrooms and fitting rooms to men, women, men who feel like women, and even men who say they feel like women. But lost in the discussion has been the safety of women and children.
Excuse me.
Please pledge to boycott Target until they change their dangerous bathroom policy. Let's let bathrooms be bathrooms, and let's take the gender discussion elsewhere. Learn more at AFA.net.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump's National Security Advisor Mike Flynn is an extraordinary public servant. He's now a prime target for his boss's enemies. They want him fired for allegedly telling the Russian ambassador pre-inauguration of impending policy shifts. U.S. intelligence sources, Democratic lawmakers, and pundits are claiming that Mike Flynn thereby violated the old Logan Act, barring freelance diplomacy. Interestingly, 3 years ago, Michael Ledeen, the co-author of General Flynn's best-selling book, Field of Fight, revealed that before the 2008 election, then-candidate Barack Obama sent retired Ambassador William Miller to Iran, quote, to assure the mullahs that he was a friend of the Islamic Republic and that they would be very happy with his policies, unquote. The Logan Act makes sense even if it's never enforced. It didn't keep Barack Obama from gaining office, and it shouldn't be allowed to drive Mike Flynn from his. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I actually was going to talk about General Flynn this morning, but we're not going to have time to get that in as much as I would like. Perhaps we'll revisit it, but here's the point. The long knives are after Lieutenant General Flynn. I have explained this before to you because he understands the true nature of Islam, the dangers of the Muslim Brotherhood. There are reasons why the long knives are out for him, and a lot of them are so-called conservatives like David Frum. I guess he deserves the term so-called based on my experience with David. But they don't understand. So many of them don't understand the dangers. General Flynn does. And so there's a huge attempt to get him out of office. So when you hear the things that you hear, I heard yesterday Chris Wallace just totally distorting the facts. I wish I could have pulled the question. But he talked about how that President Obama in December, because of the attacks that Russians made on our voting process, trying to subvert our elections, which is unproven, by the way, but that's what Chris stated as a fact, then it was terrible for General Flynn to have a conversation about sanctions on the phone later in maybe early January because he wasn't in office yet. So they're trying to stir up dissension and trying to stir up trouble against General Flynn. It's been going on behind the scenes, and now it's bubbling up so that you can publicly read and hear all that's being said. But I just want you to know what's behind that. And before I go back to Daniel, let me just say that we are continuing our partnership with, speaking of partnership, with India. India Partners is a fabulous organization that is in the process of trying to get little girls off the streets in India in these red light districts. Some of them are out there as early as 8. They are being trafficked, sold to men. Some of them are born in that district. They never know anything else. It only takes $7.08 to provide one day of safety and rescue and care for these little girls. And so if you would like to help, you know, multiply by 7 by whatever you can afford, whatever your most generous gift is, and let's help India Partners to help these little girls. The phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can go online and donate to AFR.net. That's AFR.net. And one other thing. We are asking you, 75,000 of you have already done this, to sign a petition to President Trump urging him to sign the executive order that was leaked just, what, week before last, or maybe the beginning of last week. So much happens, it's hard to keep up. But there was an executive order leaked to the press, leaked to the leftist press. I think The Nation was the first one to publish it. But it is an excellent order that would protect the rights of people who actually believe and practice biblical principles in their work, in their life, in their hearts, and their minds, without taking away the punishment from them for actually believing that marriage should be between a man and a woman, bathrooms should be established by physical traits and not by just what you think you are, etc. You get the idea. If you'd like to sign this petition, AFA.net, AFA.net, join the 75,000. Let's send a really strong signal to this president that we encourage and support and need and entreat him to sign that executive order. All right, so now the drama of this week and the continuing drama is the Ninth Circuit's decision, to ignore, to continue the stay on the executive orders that Trump has signed in regard to immigration and some visas. And so Daniel Horowitz is our guest, the author of Stolen Sovereignty. Daniel, we are hearing now from Stephen Miller and from others that there may be another order issued. What do you think about that? And how do you think, is it possible for the Trump administration to get around these horrific courts that are not honest? These so-called judges, I would say.
So I don't have any information as to what specifically they're going to do. I would imagine they're just throwing out an array of options to the public, but not really indicating where they're going to go. Keep in mind, an executive order is merely just guidance to, you know, from the CEO of the executive branch to its employees, on how to behave regarding a certain issue. And when it's pursuant to statute, it's really not a big deal. A lot of people are making a big deal of executive orders, because Obama made a big deal of them because he was actually legislating. But Trump is just merely following the statutes as written. So I would advise them, if I were in the White House, to not issue anything publicly. Just quietly tell them to do it. Again, you're not really affecting those that were already granted visas, but in terms of just who you want to let in prospectively, just do what any other administration would do. Because the problem is, once you get anything written on paper, they'll put it in court. And like I said, all they need to do is get one district judge somewhere in a circuit that's going to hold it up, which there are many, to put an injunction on it. And there's nothing he could do. I mean, you were just talking about the transgender edict. Imagine if he put out an executive order merely saying that we are not going to prohibit the government from engaging in contracts with those that don't have transgender bathrooms. Now, that sounds pretty reasonable. I guarantee you that will wind up in the courts. We need to understand, there is no floor to the immorality, the illogical twisting of the law, just the insanity of the courts. They've gone there. They will continue to go there, and we have to understand that, and we need to push judicial reform from Congress. Otherwise, the courts will destroy this country.
Daniel, so I want to talk about this. There are remedies, but nobody seems willing to take them. For instance, it seems that President Trump is kind of going it alone. I know he has allies in the House, and he has a few in the Senate. But they it seems to me that as he is trying to establish, and he repeats, and he's right, he's trying to make this country safe by preventing people who wish us harm to come into this country, it would seem to me it would be a really, really great thing if people in Congress should start a move to impeach these judges, even the Ninth Circuit, anybody, Gorsuch. I'm not even Gorsuch, sorry. I mean the judge on the lower court, the district court in Washington. And so why can't they, even if they can't move it to its completion, why can't they just, in order to help the public's understanding of how out of control things have been, file articles of impeachment against these judges?
So, you know, I'm going to have an article coming up with just a whole array of tools Congress has. There's about 10 of them. And impeachment is certainly one of them. Now, that takes 67 votes in the Senate to ultimately convict. Statutorily, just a simple majority, or, you know, however you get around the filibuster, you could take away jurisdiction from the courts. That's something that I'm very big on. It's in my book. As for impeachment, I think you're absolutely right. Even if you can't see it through, keep in mind, a run-of-the-mill district judge does not want the headache or the blot on his resume of saying you were impeached. And it only takes a simple majority in the House to actually impeach and commence a trial in the Senate, even if it needs 67 votes there. Now, you know, I wouldn't use it for anything, but for Judge Robart, when he blatantly ignored the law, he ignored 5 statutes, he ignored 200 years of settled case law, didn't show his work, put a nationwide injunction during a time of war. You know, keep in mind, we have ongoing operations in places like Somalia, Yemen, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, almost all those countries. For him to do that and not address longstanding case law and 5 statutes, that's a problem. That is a problem, and absolutely there should be articles of impeachment. But the problem is, a lot of people ask me, how is it that the weakest branch of government that was to have neither force nor will, in the words of Alexander Hamilton, is now the strongest branch? And it's a classic case of adverse possession of squatters' rights. Congress just kind of sees it, and the courts are happy to take it. So what do you think the response should be now? You would think Congress would come back with fighting words. What do you mean? These are the laws we passed. How dare the courts do this? Instead, people like Senator James Lankford and Jeff Flake and Ben Sasse are saying, well, you know, you can't violate the Constitution. I guess the Constitution is whatever the judges say it is.
And we know that's not true. And those of us that study the Constitution, you know, David, Daniel, I had to pass a Constitution. I had to learn it, almost memorize it. When I was in eighth grade, it was a requirement. And that's that when you could not graduate until you learned the Constitution. And that we are so far from that now that people don't understand that judges are not superior beings. And, you know, I am not offended at all that the president said so-called judge. I think when you wear a black robe and you pontificate and act as though you have authority that you do not have, you are a so-called judge. You are not a judge in the tradition of what American courts should be.
I'm actually very offended by the so-called conservatives that are offended. It reminds me of some of the Muslims living in America that you never see them protesting terrorism, but you'll see them protesting the counterterrorism measures. And it's kind of a similar point. Even if you disagree with, you know, some of the rhetoric attacking the judges, but if that's all that bothers you and you issue no comment being disturbed about what the judiciary is doing, you clearly have no understanding or just don't care about what the judiciary is doing to this country. Moreover, if we could attack a president, we could attack a Senate majority leader, Senate minority leader, what is it that judges are beyond reproach? I never understood that.
I don't either. In fact, if I had my way, many of them would be in stocks in the city square with their heads and their hands stuck through for what they have done to this country. You know, Rich Lowry was no fan of Donald Trump, and National Review was one of his biggest critics. Rich wrote an interesting article You might have seen, Daniel, this is the title is Our Overly Sanctified View of the Judiciary. And he says, as you might have heard, Donald Trump tweeted at a judge. And then he says, it is a symptom of our distorted and overly sanctified view of the judiciary that a criticism of a judge with a lifetime appointment is greeted with such pearl clutching. It is entirely appropriate that the political branches have their own view of the law and the Constitution and robustly contest and even deny the legitimacy of court decisions that they consider erroneous. And he goes on to lay down several cases. Maybe you could help a little bit. What is this? You would think that this is the first time a president has ever criticized a judge. But there are other cases like this, aren't there?
No, absolutely. I mean, Obama obviously did it with, you know, the Hobby Lobby decision, with campaign finance reform, Citizens United case. Bush did it, all the time. The problem is, it's the perception about Trump that they don't like him, and that's fine. You have that right not to like the president. But they're spilling over that criticism to everything he does. And that's what's so intellectually dishonest. You know, I was a strong critic of his. I supported Ted Cruz in the primary. I don't support everything that he does. But you have to keep your intellectual honesty, that the issues you supported until now, you're not going to just turn on them because Trump's supporting them, or vice versa. You got to take it issue by issue. And if he does something unlawful, certainly we're all going to criticize him. But everything he did here was not only lawful, it was well within the tradition. 43 times since Jimmy Carter, presidents have asserted the 212F authority to ratchet down any form of immigration at any time, and it's never elicited real litigation. This is clearly because the ACLU knows that the judges are political, and they view Trump as a terrible person, so they think that this is their license to just step in and conflate laws with politics.
You know, Daniel, here's a great story, I think. I didn't know this. Abraham Lincoln recoiled at the Dred Scott decision that was made by the Supreme Court that blacks were considered three-fifths persons. And so he resisted it. And in his first inaugural, he said this: if the policy of the government upon vital questions affecting the whole people is to be irrevocably fixed by decisions of the Supreme Court, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers.
Oh my gosh, that quote from Lincoln, I have it in my book, that is where we are today. But I think it's even worse than what Lincoln envisioned. They could change marriage, they could change sexuality, they could change, and the key quote is there, questions affecting the whole of the people. Courts have the right to adjudicate individual cases and controversies that have legitimate standing that come before them. But what they're doing now is violating the rules of standing so they could take any case and essentially serve as a veto on everything the political branches do. It was never designed that way, and if we are happy to keep it this way, we no longer have a republic. We have a judicial oligarchy.
All right, Daniel has written, I want to put two of his articles. He's written, listen, nobody writes like Daniel about this, but one of the most current is The Ninth Circuit's Stolen Sovereignty Should Serve as a Final Wake-Up Call. We'll put that on our Facebook page along with links to his book, Stolen Sovereignty, and also just the case of why these orders are legal. It's the full case for why courts have no jurisdiction over Trump's immigration order. I think many of you would benefit from just reading the basics on it. We'll also put Rich Lowry's article, which was excellent, Our Overly Sanctified View of the Judiciary, and that'll give you lots of things to read and share with your friends. Let's educate each other, because certainly the news media is not doing a very good job. Daniel, thank you so much for your writing, your researching, and your wisdom. Thanks, Daniel Horowitz, Conservative Review. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. God bless.
Okay, thanks. Same to you. All right, Sandy Rios on this very busy Monday morning. We'll be back tomorrow on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.